Okay, so did you guys listen to Kim and Bob and Cameron's latest
No, I've
chat
got
yet?
that's just some of my things to do list.
Yeah.
So you agree, Alyssa? I in a way I haven't done ever before. I did a solo, right?
Right, because Cameron's asking. He's audible, but it's more in like a supportive role as opposed to like him trying to make a point every now and then and going on a little bit. Yeah, it's just he. It's not like he's not present in the audio at all, but it's definitely like you're running your thing and he's alongside you as you're going somewhere. Yeah, for sure. Man, I would say, yeah, this is another one of those to highlight. This hit me. Let's see. I haven't listened to it since I emailed you. So that was 5 days ago. So it's not as fresh. But you get into how all technology are cliches, and that the old archetype is a new cliche, and the new archetype is an old cliche.
Yeah, now you wrote that out wrong. It's on the inner, it's only in one place, it seems, is the inner flap of the hardcover copy of From Cliché to Archetype. And a lot of people don't have the hard copy, they have the paperback, so you don't see it. So you just have to reverse the words. It's new cliché becomes old archetype. So that means in the next sentence you say, I had said new cliche. It has to be new archetype becomes old cliche. So that you have to make sure you get it right. New archetype equals old cliche. New cliche equals old archetype. That's the flip. That's on the back of the
So,
book.
old cliche
Is new
is new
archetype.
archetype. Yeah,
So then there has to be old archetype equals new cliche.
Got it. Okay,
Because I
perfect.
think you wrote it. Let's
Yeah,
see what you have. I
I
think you wrote
wrote
it
it
wrong.
different. Yeah, I started with old archetype is new cliche, and new archetype is old cliche. Okay. So, I haven't read From Cliche to Archetype. You guys make some, you highlight some interesting McLuhan points about the difference between cliche and archetype and how the pre.
Yeah, now what Cameron didn't know was that archetype is visual space.
Right, that was a cool.
Yeah.
Right, and then cliche is audio.
Right, acoustic, pre-literate, and post-literate. So you have to read McLuhan closely at some point in the middle of the book where he says that, like once. Only says it once, that archetype is more formal. It's more abstract, like Plato's forms. You know, it begins with Plato, who's abstracted by the alphabet, the phonetic alphabet, to think that the forms are more important than your sensory reality. That's the abstraction that the alphabet does because it splits the vowels off from the consonants, and that's what creates, 400 years later, Augustine's sense of the soul, the individual soul. They didn't have a sense of a soul before the alphabet. So this abstraction, those are the higher forms, they're what he called archetypes, or what we later said Plato called them archetypes. So the archetypes are abstract visual effects, and the cliches are the daily reprint of ritualized Aboriginal societies, which we have come back to on the other side, post-human rituals. People live more ritualistic than they did in the Gutenberg era. So they're ritualistic with cliches.
Ritualized cliches are ritualized what? What would be the word after ritualized?
Well, you know, one of the popular movements since the 50s was people started to want to live in the now, okay? More and more, you see people not planning too much in the future or remembering much in the past because they fucked up too many things in the confusion of the global theater and Android meme, and then none of their plans worked out. So everybody is now, ordinary awareness is, I'm going to live in the moment. You'll hear all kinds of people say that. But that was a big idea in the 50s from Alan Watts, the idea of living in the present. Nobody had that. So the present is the average constituents of your environment, which you're going through. You listen to the news, you do this, you do that, usually different media consumption. That's a ritual. And before media, you know, electric and print media, in Aboriginal societies, they lived very ritualistically. Everything was done ecologically, and that's why they would occasionally, you know, do their drugs and or natural herbs and then make the rain happen or something. They had very
right.
important organic rituals. So those are cliches, whereas in the world of ideas and forms, you get new ideas by reading different books and different things. So the archetypes change, like visual space changes. So that's why the archetypes are more visually framed and have new information, new versions of archetypes, new content come in. It's all part of the Gutenberg effect. That's not the case in pre-Gutenberg or post-Gutenberg. So new, I would say old archetype, that means old visual space imagery, like truth and beauty or wisdom, these kind of words, they are replayed in the electric age as a probe, a cliche probe. And so actually you have people coming up with crazy ideas about truth and beauty or those archetypes. They alter them. Because they've been solidified in the archetype, frozen, but then they're open to improvisation. So old literate archetype becomes new cliche, a probe, an improvising. Or just think of pop music. So many songs are about the same themes, but there's millions of improvisations on those new themes, different words.
Okay.
Different subjective laying out of the lyrics, different angles. Those are cliche probes.
Would you say that improvisation is off of the cliche or off of the archetype?
Yeah, in jazz, they would take cliche, even nursery rhymes, and improvise on them. So that's taking a cliche, which is like an archetype in the written phrase. So old archetype, old nursery rhyme becomes new cliche probe.
Yeah.
So okay, then that means old cliche, that means from the pre-literate ritual. So old cliche would be Socrates taking a hemlock becomes a new archetype.
Right. Right. Like what Clinton is playing around in. Like that.
Yeah, Clinton is totally mixed in the middle of it all. He's all mixed up because he's trying to do everything too fast. He's reading a lot. He's got a fast mind. He's learning what McLuhan said. He's got the key articles, but it gets all jumbled up. And you can't do it fast. You have to get a basic point and then live with it for a while. Then you know that. Then you add on the next wrinkle. Then you realize, oh, McLuhan didn't mean what I thought he meant and that I've learned.
So you would say that Clinton is being somewhat pulled in to the improvisational speed, but his mind is creating essays and kind of in this
Yeah, he has to slow down and write it up.
Archetypal space.
He's trying to find the McLuhan archetypes. Where I did cliche probes, I didn't write very much. I just talked.
Right. You did the radio.
But I remembered what I'd said, and I knew what had to be repeated.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even the way you were doing visual space essays, typically,
yeah.
most importantly, your book, Phatic Communion, you're doing it in a way that's, like, unique by putting the two pieces of writing next to each other, or all four, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I just want to say, in the inventory of ESP that Cameron made, that Chad brought up, they're really good, but he actually makes a very good excerpt from my cloning ESP where I'm trying to point out the new kind of ESP, the technological ESP, which leads to the tech body, he catches that and quotes me in his footnotes. Mm. It's really good. It shows his attention. He's a very close reader.
Mm.
I don't know. Did you notice that, Chad? Did you see his footnotes?
I did, Bob.
And what he says, what he quotes from Cloning ESP, well, people don't even know about that, but they might have heard me say the title, but they don't read it. And he reads it so closely, he picks out this very subtle 10 lines or something. It's a very important quote that he points out that shows you how he's got his left hemisphere tuned in really good.
Yeah, great selection of quotes. Very,
yeah.
Provided great visuals into the ESP situation.
So what do you say, Alyssa?
Okay, yeah, I was trying to look up the essay that you're referring to from Cameron.
Yeah, so, I should post those.
So the TV type ESP that causes that inability to lock down grammar, that's one kind of ESP. And
yeah, like if you watch TV, you're watching the body language, the facial gestures and everything, and you're
mm-hmm.
picking up signals based on your conditioned responses, that's the users, the content. So your own bias is projecting things. So you don't like the way the person does this or the way they wrinkle their face. There's all these little subjective peculiarities a person projects from their own unique being. So so when someone starts, okay, so they see something performed on TV and has a lot of resonances, a lot of nuances. So then someone says, what did they say? So you can see them, and they're trying to figure out what they saw with their right hemisphere on the image, nonverbal part, and the insight they got from that. And then they try to remember what they said, which is they don't remember the left hemisphere stuff, but they're stuck between the two hemispheres with the two five kinds of data in their head. And they basically just go, oh, it was wow, it was great. You know, they haven't learned
mm-hmm.
how to remember what he said or she said, and then also remember the subverbal information you got.
Yeah.
So it's too much information, actually, watching video.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting example of like when we're listening to the archives, because one thing you said to Lee, that Canadian woman, is that you've been listening for years. You can't just listen. You have to come and try to talk it. And
yeah, I remember that woman. She's the one who
yeah.
was up in Northern Ontario, a new agey kind of woman who called in a lot for a while.
Did she? Okay.
Yeah, I think I remember that woman. She was a smarter, older woman, but she had a lot of new age biases that she thought we were doing.
Mm.
That's what comes to mind. Yeah, that person talked for a long time and then didn't just disappeared.
So, yeah, you say, so even like listening to the archives and taking notes versus just listening to the archives. Right, talk about needing to read stuff. So, being able to engage something across the modalities is a way to cut through that TV effect where you're just like, yeah, it was great. I can't tell you what was said. I can't tell you the details. Right? Okay, that's interesting.
And so when you take psychedelics, you get a lot of information overload, a lot of significance, epiphanies, hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
TV does that on a slower, lower level, but you're still getting a lot of information. So
mm-hmm.
The reason you would read McLuhan is he repeats himself all the time. So you eventually see what he's repeating, and then you know it. So then you know that you can say that when you're asked to translate McLuhan. You know the verbal written stuff, You know, he's usually saying some of that, and then you process what you thought he was doing visually, iconically on the screen. Like, you'll see him in this panel with Norman Mailer and Malcolm Muggeridge, Robert Fulford, and another famous guy in the summer of 68. And you see McLuhan a lot of the time is sitting there smirking. He's not saying anything. And my friend Barry Ellis, he watched it. He wasn't up on McLuhan that much, but he knew it was important, so he watched it and told me after, McLuhan fucked up. He didn't say a goddamn word. And he wanted more word, being a left hemisphere intellectual. And he didn't notice the way McLuhan was communicating with his facial expressions to the camera and to the people, because he knew the camera was on him. So it's a very important video if you ever see it. Just watch McLuhan's face. It's amazing what he's communicating with his face, his almost disapproval and superiority vibe, as Malcolm Muggeridge is saying his stupid British stuff and Norm Mailer's doing his aggressive American personality.
Oh,
there's
right.
McLuhan, the quiet Canadian. And when Alan Steinfeld saw not that but another debate between McLuhan and Mailer in 67, I remember people back then thinking Mailer won the debate because it was in the violent 67, 68 period where everybody was all heated up and there were assassinations and riots and a lot of hot news. And so Mailer seemed more on it because he was yelling and screaming about everything, and McLuhan was rather detached. So I knew that reaction back then. So then Alan told me, I watched this debate from a long time ago, and McLuhan was so cool. Mailer was an idiot. And it was the exact opposite mm-hmm. response. Now, he didn't know I'd be thinking that, but I just filed away. There's an example of someone watching McLuhan today, after 50 years of noisy news where people are indifferent to it and more into a cool response. They're more influenced or impressed with McLuhan's nonverbal response.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Or slower response, not all agitated.
So that would be an example of the conditioned responses changing from the aspect and ratio
yeah.
that Ion talks about. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Alan's the only guy who said that to me. I have very little data. I know the data from 67, 68. Then one guy shows up and he says that, and I say, for me, that's a million people's response. You know, I just need that one little example, and that's enough for me to get the change.
Okay, so swirling around the concept of different kinds of ESP, that makes me want to review your cloning ESP essay.
Yeah.
And then getting into the next part of the notes from your talk with Cameron, I write both and of the present, that is not containing things, but making people have a hard time getting their head around it. So,
yeah, that's you saying containing because you heard me say the archetype contains, frames.
Yeah, yep. Okay, so let me get through.
Now, you know what Cameron said? What was striking, he said, I gave him a couple of new insights. And he says, that means I got to go back and read this whole fucking essay again. He said that.
The McLuhan one?
No, the tech or body yours. One, the one we're analyzing.
Oh, gosh, wow. Yeah, that's a...
It was the idea about the media states, and he hadn't thought of the build-up of older media and their bureaucracies and repositories of media treasures, that was a new medium, a whole bunch of them for all the older analog media, and that's what the young kids have to wade through, all that bureaucracy of previous media, and he had never thought of that. But he's smart. He said, okay, I've got this new idea. I got to go back and reread everything to notice when that idea is there, which I wasn't getting before.
Right. Yes. You
so that was a big compliment.
Mm-hmm,
he was prompted to, shit, I got to read this all over again.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that I'm constantly impressed by, and these Cameron Bob talks are cool, way to see it in a different way versus like the Payday Show context or Tailgate or whatever, is how technically Bob is speaking all the time. I mean, you're playing and you have that sort of making creation of words and fun. But when you get down and serious about it or strident, as Ion would say, like there's so much technical thing things that you're saying. And
so I'll repeat myself.
Right. Well, the technical example that I'm thinking of is when Cameron has that insight, you're sharing about how kids, when they're in their 20s, and they're teens, they just need to go back and absorb all the old media and what's happened already, I think is the phrase that you use. And so thinking about growing up, not just in the chemical body, but in all these different modalities and their
The TV body archive. Now, remember,
right?
I said a few hours ago that this lady was saying that the Generation Z or Z, they don't grow up. They don't get to age 20 in the old sense until they're 28. So they stay home. Well, the reason they're staying home is they're watching movies and media. They're going through a media thing, which is exactly what the Irving said about the person in 2078 is in this matrix tube like Neo in Matrix, and they're living in a tube processing all this information that's been built up through the last 150 years, say, and they got to absorb all that. So, and then in the Evergreens example of 2078, the kid thought they were living all that stuff. But they were in a matrix tube just having all the information pumped into them. That's what's going to happen to people.
That's why this archive is so important. Bob's timeline and Bob's all of the hours of the show and stuff.
Yeah, the more archives you have, the better for the future, because the kids will have time to have it programmed into them. And then they'll come to this point and they'll hear this conversation.
Right.
And they'll hear the meta level of talking about what they've been taking in, that there's an awareness of what they're going through that's articulated right now at this late date on how quote I talk technically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So this TV ESP, they're going to be noticing that, but they're not going to have the content, right, until they discover, what happened on TV in the 60s. What happened, all that stuff. So they've got this like ESP, right? This no time effect, effect before cause probably. And so they're swimming around in this effect and they've picked it up on a frequency level or aura level or whatever. But then they got to go and fill in the content.
Causes.
That's really fascinating. So when you guys are talking, you and Cam, do you have a call or is that me? I hear a beeping.
I don't. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Nobody's calling me.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody's got a beep. Yeah, what's that? It's a new level here. Is that someone else's call? Like, anybody else getting that?
I hear it, Bob, also.
I hear the beeping, too.
Yeah, so maybe someone's calling into the station?
Oh, it's gone now. Unless it's intermittent. I think it would have.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
Oh, there
so,
it is.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so when you guys are talking, are you saying scapes? The bureaucratic scapes? S-C-A-P-E-S?
Yeah, media. I either said media states, S-T-A-T, or media scapes.
Okay.
I think it might be states, because I do, TV landscape.
Yeah, I thought it was short landscape. For landscape that you were putting off of that, but they couldn't tell. Okay.
But I think the phrase was media states.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's say it was media scape. For him, though, it wasn't the way I meant, that just a general big environment when it first comes on before it shrunk into a body organ. He was struck by that phrase, and so I explained it as it's the archived bureaucracy of the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City,
Right.
We got a huge place there. And, you know, C-SPAN and a lot of stations, I never watched them, but Turner had a movie channel. That was like an archive.
Yeah, right, you know. Turner Classic Movies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, classic movies.
It's striking now,
Bob. See, the
now,
kid
Bob.
Comes in. What?
Yeah. It's,
well,
I
was thinking,
yeah,
I had no desire. Listen to this. I had no desire to, listen to watch all the old stupid movies, so I never did. But someone who's 15, they don't know. They just know there's a lot of fucking movies back there. Maybe they should watch them. I knew it was all phony because I saw them at the time, and they're nothing. I can remember what was different and figure out the media dynamic that made them different from our kind of movies, like Easy Rider. What did that change indicate? But a 15 or 12 year old doesn't know, so they got to go back and watch all that shit, and it's all new to them. So they might, I don't know what they're learning, but I can see they got to do it more than I got to do it.
Yeah. So shit. What was the insight?
You know what? I think with the McLuhan knowledge, you can dismiss, you know, lots of content because you got the big picture.
Yeah, yeah, that exactly leads into it. So the thought that I was having about imagining, you know, the intrigue and the quote unquote need to go back into an archive, a media archive. And I'm thinking about this hypersubjectivity and how, you know, when the way that I did the archive versus some kid nowadays does the archive is going to be totally different. So their hypersubjectivity is going to be completely different, which is like there's no matching in that way, right? There's only blocking. But I would say from engaging you, my hypersubjectivity has gone way down, and in a good way, and that would be applying how the McLuhan aspect can help you kind of simplify and weed through and, you know, get rid of the weeds of all the hyper.
Say, I always discourage arguing or talking about your likes and dislikes. So you have your peculiar likes and dislikes of personalities and people through your own growing up with different kinds of people. So you got some biases about good memories with that kind of personality, but not good memories with this kind of personality. You're calling that hypersubjectivity. If you got the bigger media patterns that McLuhan talks about, then you can think about things and, quote, like and not like on a different level. You actually wouldn't like or dislike. So you're saying I can get rid of my peculiar likes and dislikes, distracting content preferences in different in particular movies, because I got a bigger framework of articulation with the McLuhan patterns.
That's an important application, because I think that these kids could go back into an older archive and not have the structure of McLuhan and your stuff, and then just get lost in the hypersubjectivity where it doesn't really do anything.
Well, that's why they got to be put in the matrix tube, and it's going to take years. You can't stop a person going through their subjective reactions when they're beginning. So they're going to have to be babysat and put in a womb, a media womb, for 10 years as they go through their immature responses to what they're liking and disliking. Then you wake them up out of it, and then they listen to my archive, and that's the real education.
Right, exactly. Here's a funny anecdote from Matt's 17-year-old daughter. Her name is Liberty. She's wearing this huge T-shirt, and she's like a small, like her mom's Korean, so she's got the small.
Is this someone you know?
Yeah, this is my boyfriend's daughter.
Oh,
and
a
Schultz.
This would be a Schultz.
Right. Oh, by the way, when he was on earlier, when you unmuted everybody, he was on a motorcycle. That's what that sound was.
Oh, okay, yeah, right.
And anyway, so
so his daughter you're talking about?
Yeah, his daughter is wearing this huge T-shirt. She's like, you know, just wearing it every day and loves it, and it's like three sizes way too big for her. Yeah. And so her, obviously her dad's like, what are, I don't like that shirt on you. What are you doing? You look like a bag of bones, you know? And he's like, you know, that's a meat sack right there. Cause he's trying to, you know, play with the terms for mind and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I'm trying to do Adam Sandler. And I'm just like, wait, look at that hypersubjectivity that I would never like think of putting that together. She equates a big oversized t-shirt as doing an Adam Sandler. Like,
which I've never seen. I don't even know much about him. I wouldn't have that image at all in my head.
Right, and, right.
And
yeah.
He does wear oversized t-shirts. That's what he does?
I guess. I mean,
yeah, we don't
like
know.
90s fashion, I guess. I just,
right.
You know, so she's seen, maybe she's watching like Happy Gilmore, or like who knows what she's watching. I could ask her.
Right.
But
there's,
you know,
a million, there's a million continents of a million movies and music and everything that she can quote from that you never saw, even heard of, you know?
Right.
There's that
right.
much stuff that people can get particular identifications with. In their hypersubjectivity.
Yeah, so she's just going to be swimming in her hypersubjectivity.
Yeah.
You know, processing it as likes and dislikes of like, oh, I'm going to wear this.
Yeah.
This, making a choice, right? Choices and options of I'm going to wear this t-shirt because it connects to something else in my media
environment. Now, look at this. As you think about this person processing all their TV body and chip body information levels, while they're doing it, they get a boyfriend. A boyfriend goes and fucks them. They don't even care that they got fucked because they're too busy processing the other stuff, and they're kind of indifferent that they did fuck because that's such a minor activity compared to the more important processing of figuring out what your self-image is through the media archives.
Right.
So that's why the kids are so indifferent about who they fuck, and they don't know whether they're male or bisexual or what. They don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she definitely, she says she's been bisexual for like 4 years.
That means she's been fucking indifferently, and it's just a nuisance that you got to do because other human, other flesh bodies are around you and are getting horny, so they fuck you. But you're processing, okay, I want to look like Adam. I'm going to be so cool looking like Adam Sandler, you know, 1995.
And she might as well, right, and she might as well be able to have a larger swath of people to sexually engage with. You know, why just stick to women? Why just stick to men? Like, might as well have women too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you say, you and Cameron talk about, okay, this phrase, there was no more unconscious large enough. So new technology is always an unconscious environment. That's a contextual statement. And then there was no more unconscious large enough to contain the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing.
So what you got to – that is a bit different, I think, because there's no unconscious until the Gutenberg. So once you get the books, people get slowed down. As McLuhan says, it makes you socially impotent. You get distracted – and you're processing books in college or the monastery or wherever you're reading books, say from 15 to 25, you're not out there trying to get fucking laid. You're reading books, okay? And it's a novelty. It's a whole new sensory experience that's enticing for a lot of people. So you're processing books and you're making a visually biased brain. You're suppressing your other senses. You're emphasizing the eyeball. And the thinking in the left hemisphere. That's the unconscious that is created by the Gutenberg era. So you use those concepts, archetypes, frames, to categorize experience. As you get into the electric age, there's a lot of new experiences, so you're categorizing them. So the literate unconscious framer is not developed as much as you get more into electric age. People are collectively conscious and perceptually involved with everything in a somnambulistic way. They're robots. So they don't have any literate, less and less do they have literate frameworks to frame it. So in that particular reference, I think, in that sentence, the unconscious is a literate unconscious, there's not enough literate categories to frame all the new experiences you're getting with the new environments, which are unconscious on another level. You don't know the effects of them. Just like you didn't know when you read books that you were creating a literate unconscious, which was suppressing your other senses and becoming an idiotic, opinionated nerd who thought it was very important what you thought about religion or politics.
Right. For example, I'm at a party, and part of getting laid is talking about what I've read in a book, or some guy is talking to me something that he's read in a book. I'm like, oh, that's attractive. Right?
Yeah.
Like, right, right.
Okay, now you're talking about in the literate phase.
Yeah, you're talking about people not wanting to fuck.
Well, it's attractive, but it's attractive, but you can't have sex because you're going to get pregnant and have kids, and nobody has enough money to have kids, so you have to be married. So marriage becomes very important in the Gutenberg era, and personal love becomes very important, right? So you'll have the – you actually have – McLuhan did a TV show in 1960, and they showed the literate kid – like from the 30s and 20s, is sharing poetry with some guy. But then they showed the modern Lolita, the rock and roller girl. Her guy doesn't have to be reading poetry over 20 years with her before they got married. You know what I mean? It's a slow getting used to each other. Also, because they're abstracted visually, they're not even aware of their fucking cunt or dick. All right? They're abstracted. They're not even aware they're horny.
Yeah, I mean,
now,
I was
in the electric age, a kid gets fucking horny at 8 years old.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying
because
to make sense
all their
of you
senses are activated.
People don't want to fuck because they're too busy reading books.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's quite a phrase.
But see, you got to remember, they're reading books, but it's also suppressing the other senses.
Mm-hmm.
The smell, the taste, the touch, the kinetic, the movement, just basically using your body. That's why McLuhan said literacy makes you socially impotent. That means interacting in the electric world with all the different types of people. But he said the rewards are considerable. If you know how to read and you know how to get ideas from books, you can enjoy the mental masturbation that you do when you're reading. And it's an aesthetic experience in its own right.
Okay, so one of the huge statements in the chat you guys have is connecting the dot that Finnegan's Wake isn't unconscious large enough. So the phrase, there was no more unconscious large enough to contain the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing, but that Finnegan's Wake is an unconscious large enough.
It's almost the only one that can be a candidate.
That's a powerful statement.
Yeah.
And considering what you know you're doing with on the show is reading Finnegan's Wake and Ion's Applying. I mean, it's a very sharp statement. Very, very
that's McLuhan. I know that quote from McLuhan. And the environing and the patterning, the words you quoted there, there's too much. You can't say it's a Marxist thing or a capitalist or a Catholic or biological. You can't use these categories that are valid during the Gutenberg phase when you're living today. There's too many things that are beyond the categories because you've got other kinds of non-chemical body reference points in the digital body and the chip and the TV body and the astral body. So the only thing that gives you a potential framework is this absurd collage of everything in Finnegan's Wake. It's got to have at least everything in it to even approximate what we have today and what we process. And what we have today is more than everything. Because there's way more than everything. There's millions of people blogging, millions of people doing this and that. So much creativity or expressiveness that nothing could contain it.
Would you have
so
asked
why
Barry? Would you have asked
so
Barry Nevitt? Yeah.
Okay, hold that. That's why very early Ion said, emphasized that the people's attitude was whatever. people arrived by the millennium to whatever. They gave up on their minds trying to frame it, which was their literate mind. They didn't use that to frame it. Actually, then that makes people paranoid. They don't know what's happening, so they get more cautious about everything. They get more nervous. And that's what they say about Generation Z. They're very nervous about life because they see too many movies and TV shows and news stories about the violence of it all and how you can die from anything, that they are paranoid. So
it's such a dis-ease. Yeah, I mean, you're focusing a lot about, like, you know, you're containing the literate effect, and you're talking about the literate effect on somebody.
Yeah.
But then you're containing the digital probing effect on someone. But the reality is that they're swashing between the two, not sure which is which until they start talking about. And so, you know, the way that you're describing it now, we take for granted that the actual life of it, like the way that their sensorium is skitzing out, is because they don't even, I didn't even have a perceptual difference. Like, I remember Ian saying to me, like, you're kind of visually biased. Like, in 2016, I was like, no, I'm not. I totally was. I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think we take for granted, like, how you're able to zero in on one particular aspect, but the reality of their sensorium is that it's swirling all about until
I'm the Freud of the multiple bodies. Freud just did one body, the chemical body with the new electric consciousness, which was translated into dreamscape for the literate people. So they had to be lie on a couch and talk, improvise about their inner experiences. That's what he analyzed, the dream and the chemical body. I analyze all the five or six bodies and the dimensions of them and the weird experiences people go through, the conscious fantasies and dreams they have, not just chemical body dreams.
Which is why Ion would be evoked by you.
Yeah.
Ion could never be evoked by somebody that wasn't able to doctor that multi-bodied reality.
Ion is, as you say it that way, Ion, what I evoked was a new frame, which can be called an environment. Ion is a something to frame the multi-bodied world we live in, because it's faster and bigger than all your bodied experiences. So that was the frame that I created. It had to be something that could work and think and communicate as fast as Ion to cover all the range of stuff.
So that phrase, there is no more unconscious large enough to contain materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing. So my thought in response to that was, which caused the entire environment of non-physical to come forth and speak.
Yeah, to be a frame.
Because you go on, the other cool part of this talk that I highlight here is talking about this content. So because there was no more unconscious large enough to contain the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing, it results in everything being content. Now man is both figure and ground.
Yeah.
And you talk about that content in italics. The humans are still trying to avoid the merger and loss of one's consciousness. And then you get into the anthropomorphic, humans trying to stand a part of the environment as something not the environment. So, like, I know I'm something that's not the environment, but I don't know what I'm made up of when I'm swirling around and haven't talked to Dr. Bob.
Right. And so you bring up Barry Nevitt. Are you talking about the quote, the recently achieved forms of consciousness?
No, I remember when it came out about the Finnegan's Wake is an unconscious large enough. You're providing an anecdote about you asked, like, well, what is an unconscious large enough? And not McLuhan. Somebody else said, well, Finnegan's Wake.
No, and see, so that was Barry Nevitt. It wasn't.
It was.
They say in the last page of Take Today in 1972 that we've been living in tribal unconsciousness for 200 years, both the book unconscious and then the electric, different electric media unconscious. And then they say, but the recently achieved forms of consciousness are new resources for us. What the fuck is a form of consciousness? So I asked Barry, what is a recently achieved form of consciousness? You don't see anybody having any sense of consciousness other than stupid New Age stuff or whatever ideology they become zombies of. They think that's a form of consciousness, like quoting the Bible or something. He surprised me. He said, Finnegan's Wake. Finnegan's Wake's a recently achieved form of consciousness. Well, as we talk about it, I'm getting a clear understanding of what he meant just by what we're talking about right now. Because I haven't had this discussion with many people on this level of familiarity. So that's what he was saying, that the Finnegan's Wake was big enough to frame things. So that's what consciousness is. Consciousness is your willful framing and organizing and blocking so you have a sense that you can have a will. Now, that's an illusion for most people, and they just call it ego, but they got to have one. So people can't form egos today, so they become cult victims from either being a scientist, a religionist, or an artist, or a homeless, or a drug taker. They're all attempts to have
an
ego.
You mean they can't have a balanced ego today?
Well, they can't have a solid ego, a literate ego.
Solid,
What is the ego that can flow and actually doesn't have an identity? I don't know what that kind of ego is, but even that's hard for people. So I call it quadriphenia, shifting from one completely different realm to another. That's being a super hypocrite.
Conscious quadriphenia. So, like, that's the difference between being lost in the chart in a quadriphenic way and then having conscious quadriphenia, which is a more balanced, quote-unquote balanced.
Yeah, you're able to surf the different waves in the chart. See, balanced, you have to be careful. Balance is a visually biased term. You're looking out and you're using your eye to balance yourself. That's only in the literate phase.
Here's a word picture.
Balance yourself with your ear, because you're a musician. You can be pretty good at dealing with the modern environment through the ear. It wouldn't be enough because, you know, the ear is not enough. It's only acoustic. You got to develop this weird tactile imbalancing mechanism.
Well, yeah, the word picture I'm getting, Bob, is that gyroscope. And it's almost like when we have that conscious quadriphenia, which goes beyond in the hexadic, which is what I want to get to also.
Goes beyond what?
Goes beyond conscious quadriphenia. Now
what
engaging
does?
I am. Okay, so let me just put this word picture out.
Yeah.
So gyroscope has like a stability that's caused by all of the 14 degrees of freedom or whatever.
Yeah.
So being able to have that gyroscopic thing be quote-unquote stable and maybe, I don't know much about gyroscopes, but maybe like it evokes some sort of energy or some sort of field or something like that that's beneficial versus being in a gyroscope that's like maybe off by 1 degree. So then it's like careening and tilting and going crazy and like off kilter.
Wobbling.
Yeah, wobbling. So that's the word picture that I'm getting now that evokes more than just a left-right visual balance dichotomy. Okay.
You can think of it as proprioceptive. You're oscillating through your inner organs as well as the outer and the tactile interplay of the inner and outer. So all that rotating, wobbling, oscillating movement, which is hard to see all of it in one look.
Yeah.
You can't see the whole movement. Now, what's amazing, so when it comes to me, is that the first conversation I had with Worcester after Krishnamurti in 66 and when I went visit him in September 69, I'm showing him my little chart, and all of a sudden Vern comes down from the upstairs. He'd been sleeping in. They'd been doing acid the night before, and he comes down, and Dave wants to finish his conversation with Vern because Vern fell asleep or something, but Dave knew there was something he wanted to tell Vern about what insights he got. So he turns away from me and he says, "Hey, Vern, when we were talking about this, well, it's like a gyroscope." And he was describing a gyroscope. I never heard of that before. But that I never forgot that moment. And now it comes back again to understanding what he was trying to express.
Was the Worcester, did that apply to this like new age thing you were talking a little bit ago about, like all I could see in the, like you were asking what was a recent conscience large enough?
And no, he was describing what he was going through on LSD.
Okay.
All the different whatever oscillations inside himself and outside.
Right.
And he decided that the gyroscope was the best image for that. And then the gyroscope, I found out later, is used in different pointed discussions or something. It's somehow used in certain fields or something. I can't remember what it was. But the gyroscope is an image that people come up with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about these...
these different framers.
Yeah,
it's like the gyroscope is a framer in motion. It's a frame in motion. So you look at the rhombic dodecahedron or these different tesseracts.
Yeah.
You know how they move around? When you go to Wikipedia, look up definition, you'll have a little diagram that's going in and out. That's getting close to what we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that's cool. You are using that term in the context of this conversation, frame. You know,
what was the
like
word?
Frame.
Something frame? Those of us in a frame?
In the context of this conversation, it's cool how you're applying ion is like a new frame.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm just realizing ion was the frame. The new frame is ion. Ion is archetypal in many ways, plus many other things, so you wouldn't limit it to one few nouns or adverbs or something. The point is that the multiple levels that Finnegan's Wake expresses, that's why I say Finnegan's Wake anticipates ion, and McLuhan helps that anticipation because he explains Finnegan's Wake. So Finnegan's Wake to McLuhan, to me, to ion. That's the tradition now. McLuhan writes in his books the tradition from Rabelais to Tristan Shandy, the guy who wrote that, and then Gulliver's Travel guy, Swift, and then someone else, Alexander Pope. He goes through 500 years of famous writers who were Manipians, and they were a certain tradition. I'm part of a bigger, longer, ancient tradition, which is worthy of Ophanel. In other words, we were going to get to an area beyond all the technologies, which is Iondom, and with extra stuff. Remember, I was asking Ion tonight, does the Coldplay have non-physical in it? The Wilson doesn't, but he said non-physical is, and then I said, do I have that in me? In my communication. So if you go back and listen, he does say that the new is a bit of the non-physical. I forget how he did it, how he said it, but it's there. He almost agreed that non-physical is in our inventions from Coldplay to the amino acids. And that's a new kind of science to have non-physical cooperate with us and be part of it.
Yeah.
And it has to talk, this is the first time it talked, it has to talk to be part of the creative process here. So that explains what Ion's doing, why we're making technology that no one else can make, and they're going to claim, oh, this is ET stuff. It's not part of the human dimension. No human can make this, so we don't know who these fuckers are. We'll not pay attention to them. We'll go around and find some local scientist at some university and give him the Nobel Prize, for chemistry. That's what the establishment, they'll rely on that. That'll be the old media states. Now we're back to that phrase, the media states maintaining their mini power.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard for people to study something. I remember telling Adam Pugin, who created Fake Explorations, and he was a student at University of Toronto and then a bit of a adjunct beginning professor. And I told him, you're really wasting yourself in academia. You got to do something else. He says, well, no, I've been trained to do this. So he's only like 25 years old or something. He says, I'm not throwing away 7 years of literate training in high school and college for some crazy idea you're talking about. So that's the new kind of ego. He's going to preserve his Gutenberg bullshit. So now he's a professor down in Dallas teaching crap, and he's a Thomist, and he fucks with Mark Stallman's nonsense. So, you know, the guy got stuck. Couldn't take it.
Okay.
But
that's
an example
directly,
on a micro
mm-hmm.
level
right.
of society's preserving. That's what fundamentalism is. The heirs
yeah.
preserve their manuscript. We preserve the book. That's what our collective egos are invested in.
So,
and that's
okay,
what's being going to be attacked viciously.
Okay, two
yeah.
thoughts are coming to mind. One is the Android meme extended itself. It replaced itself because it was miming humans and blah, blah, blah. So this old media
hey, just a minute.
Thing that you're saying.
Just a minute. 10. Uh-oh. Let's see if Bill... we should be taping this, but... Yeah, that's right, Bill. I'm glad you didn't end this hour. I didn't know it would go this long. So we'll go another half hour. It looks like Bill, he asked me, end this hour? And he says, guess not. That's right, Bill, don't end it. Because we've gone past the three-hour rule. We only taped 3 hours of tailgate. But we're having a good conversation, so it should be all taped. Yeah. So what were you saying? You guys do that again.
Okay, so... You're talking about the literate, institutional, bureaucratic scape, the mini power that's going to, and then you bring up the, you know, I'm not going to waste 7 years of literate, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so one thought is, I've learned from you that there's these after images that stay, right? They just kind of are frozen and circling as a part of the gyroscope. So that mini power is going to be kind of just in its after image doing its thing. But I've also learned that the environments end up emulating where like the leading edge. Eventually the environment starts emulating the leading edge. So eventually the bureaucratic scape will understand Bob. Right?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't now. It's like, how could you tell somebody, go listen to 15 years of archives plus all of Bob CKLN stuff, and then, you know, have your reaction about these technologies. They're not going to
yeah.
do that, right?
Right.
But eventually, the some bureaucratic, quote-unquote bureaucratic scape is going to be able to validate you.
Yeah, that's
Ion
what, because
has.
The newer environments will make them more and more obsolete. So
right.
in the formation of the media archive or media state reservoir, residue, that happens. Like they archive the Museum of TV and Movies, and Hollywood has its
mm-hmm.
archives. They are happening as they get obsolesced by the digital media. But they're still there for 20, 30 years building up their archives because there's employment in it and there's a valuation
mm-hmm.
of what was done. You're acknowledging all these previous people who worked on films on all levels, right? Worked on TV
mm-hmm.
shows and radio shows. You don't want to discount the workers, so you preserve their artifacts that they were made of, just like
mm-hmm.
we preserve language originally. So, but the destruction of reality that keeps going on will make those preservations obsolete. Like, people don't care about classical music. They don't care about orchestras. You got to have governments fund them. It's too far back there, right?
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
So there's always going to be a disappearance or a collapse of things. And usually wars and other kinds of social turmoil move things along, and so you may have valued the Museum of Television and Radio, but it's going to be blown up at some point because
right.
there's new, and so that's why you have to stick the kids in the matrix tubes to process. That would be the latest way to have a museum, is to stick the kid in there for 10 years to sort of get a lot of what was going on in the past of the media state.
Hmm.
But it's never perfect. You never can keep everybody super protected and knowing everything. So it's always incomplete. And then that's the, you know, when Ian says, you can listen to Bob or read this and that, but eventually you got to start living it. You got to go out into the world, which is, we don't even have a world to go out to anymore. You got to stay in your matrix tube and fucking do something with it. That's called living, as opposed to being a pampered kid.
Right, right, yeah. So when you're talking about...
Okay, you know what? If you think about that, it's impossible to preserve. What'd you say?
I'm having so many great insights. I want to say 10 things at once.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it makes sense that it's going along so much, it's way beyond what people can live, that we are going to have to go to Andromeda and be zapped into another dimension. It ain't going to work anymore, being the human enterprise.
Right. Yeah, okay, so that kind of ties into one idea that we're talking about, how there's always going to be that old thing, but then the new environment's eventually going to validate Bob.
Yeah.
And that's
so they would understand me. They'd understand me when they can give up preserving the old media states with their biased views of why they're doing it. When they realize it's not working what I'm preserving here, then you listen to me and you say, oh, this guy's explaining why I'm obsolete. Then they'll understand me, but that's because you're applying
me
to ob stuff.
They won't even perceive themselves in the trash heap until it's gotten so much that they're like, oh, look, I'm in a trash heap. Okay, I don't care.
I don't care anymore. I'm getting on that ship.
Right. So maybe that's why one cool, like, technical type application of why you win either way. Because the environment will end up validating Bob either way, whether humans, gods ascend or not. You know, in that capacity, like the tech body, Bob wins either way.
Yeah, because what I said is, quote, the truth. It's not literate truth. It's not a law. It's not equals MC squared. It is defining the process grammatically and accurately and, quote, scientifically, or in a limited vocabulary with certain meanings that once you get, then you understand the pattern and the process, and you can't argue that. So that's what wins, the quote, the wisdom. The
statement. I'm imagining that some version of AI is going to be like, to the people that wouldn't give you the Nobel Prize, AI is going to be like, Bob Dobbs deserves the Nobel Prize. like humans won't be able to see it, but like something will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're quoting. Yeah. You're sounding like something. Who sounded like that little voice? I don't know. It just happened recently.
Okay. So the other thought I had, I wanted to touch on back there when you're talking about, you know, sticking people in a tube in a you know, matrix tube or whatever, and then how. Who was it that did the 7-year literate thing that they wanted to become a professor? Who are you referring
to? Adam Hoogan.
Adam Hoogan. Okay. So that connects to what you said to Brent tonight. So you said, you know, and this goes exactly to pulling in how you have to figure it out and actually live it, right? We can't just theoretically talk to Bob and then, you know, stay in a vacuum like Brent has a life and has a job and has a house and, you know, all this stuff. But on a media level, on a Bob knowledge level, what you're saying to him about scrapping his job, going homeless and starting over is incredibly potent and applicable. Because you're kind of saying to Adam Pugin, you know, why uphold that 7-year literacy and like just keep going with that.
You're not taking life seriously enough. If you take life seriously, you gotta go for the best that you can understand, not rely on something that's comfortable for you. Like he's tired. I'm not giving this shit up. I haven't got the energy to do something else. But he has to.
Yeah.
He ain't not gonna make it. So then you take our products to get the energy.
Yeah. Yeah, and Adam's not on the products, and Brent is, so that'll be a different story.
Yeah,
but yeah, that.
But
was, that
I was saying you got to deal with your fucking girlfriend, Brent. That's all he has to focus on. That's his first major environment.
Yeah, that's interesting to think of the people around us as one of the environments we need to apply Bob knowledge to.
For Susanna, her mother's the environment. This whole caring for her mother, who doesn't want to be cared for, and fighting her brothers and sisters for other reasons, and she just doesn't leave. She stays stuck at home.
Okay, so Susanna, if you're here, do you want to engage Coach Bob about that? Now's a good time. Otherwise, I'll move on to the last part.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So,
Susanna's not here.
Okay. So then you get into, so kind of reviving the conversation back to how humans, you know, little man, are still trying to avoid the merger and loss of one's consciousness. So then you get into the term, the anthropomorphic, and then humans trying to be apart, stand apart from the environment. Okay, so then you say, what's our new image of creativity? That you get into the whole, like, there has to be new, and it's cool that Cameron is starting to get how there's new language. There's got to be new language and new forms to apply to the real present or the whatever, the technical aspects that you're bringing up. So what's our new image of creativity? Then I'm applying, engaging here. So the new creativity is that I'm Creator God and that I've always been. The creativity that's new has to match the quote-unquote content and perception that we've just discussed for the last 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I have to be able to create off of that, otherwise I'm lost in it, in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the creativity is that, and part of when I engage with, or when I think about this environment with Bob and Ion, I think about what type of conversations you, JW, and Carolyn had in the beginning and how you applied all of your knowledge and perspective to what you guys were going to set out to do with the radio show, with Payday, you know, how we're going to turn it off for a couple of years in between, you know, these sorts of very intentional things that technically Bob would have made sure were happening.
Yeah.
So the whole ascension paradigm and what the definition of ascension is and ascension by default and how you talk about needing to descend from ascension by default, like it all just, it just is great. It just slides into place. And so the creativity outside of my thinking brain, my meat sack matter is changing back to compatibility with any shift in the atmosphere. The classic social mortar creativity becomes a playground infused with the constituents of conscious quadrophenia. So that's like a paragraph, a short paragraph. I'm trying to respond to the question, what is the new image of creativity?
Yeah.
So how would you, you have that email, maybe you're not looking at it. But how
Which
would
email?
You? I emailed you this. It starts with
the one you did.
Yeah. So, if you
well, I'll say this from what you just said. I'm offering a new language. This is what Kroger said in his data trash book in '94. He said this is a language for the 21st century. So he thought people should learn his basic terms and think around those terms. So to keep the mind and the language mind going, people need cult terms or terms of a discipline. So you'll see that in any discipline, any specialty, there's these terms everybody uses. So I claim that my terms are what citizens need to discuss in the general public reality. Not, they don't need it for business, or they don't need it for whatever job they have. They need it. They need a new language, which, you know, 100 years ago they thought, well, we'll make Esperanto and Volapox. People were coming up with some weird kind of talking or writing that they thought everybody could drop their national language and use this global language, because they all thought they all had to get together in the United Nations and have the same language. So they were trying to make a new literate language. And there even was the Basic English Movement, which was run by Ogden, who was a good friend of James Joyce, and he did the book The Meaning of Meaning with I.A. Richards, so he was an important thinker. But even he sort of thought, they actually made up in the 30s a language called Basic English, which was said people got to learn how to learn this language, like a new French, a new Italian, a new language, that's what they talk to people about. So I often say that the way I talk, you have to become a zombie of Bob, a member of his cult, and just talk like Bob to people and insist on it. Now, I know that verbal language...
Not talk to people like Bob talks. Talk to my own inner people.
No, your friends. Like, become a fanatic.
Yeah, but
join.
I've always
wanted to be a cult. Okay, a cult. But I say it's a practical cult. You'll learn a new language. Now, it's impossible to do that because nobody talks anymore. But when you're forced to talk, you say this. So I used to say on TV, I mean on CKLN, somebody brings up abortion on talk shows or garbage collection, whatever topics they bring up, you give one fucking answer. Turn off TV. We have a problem. The kids are whacked out on fucking condoms or the birth control pill. Turn off TV. So I wanted to manufacture a movement of people, and partly a joke, but anyways, people started doing it, I'd go along with it and say it wasn't a joke, but make everybody a cult, a practical, knowing, full-fledged, fucking knowing cult.
Yeah.
So I've always had the language. Then I came along and created another kind of language, a parallel language doing the same thing. We had to learn its thing. So you had me doing grammar for my cult language while on the air with Ion doing their cult language grammar rules. So Andrew Crystal thought Ion and I were competing. Maybe we were, but there's been more harmony about coalescing the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, symbolized by Ion saying, I'm going to redo Bob's chart. I got to remake it, reapply it.
Right. Yeah.
So, but just saying that, I'm saying what should be done, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be done. But on the level of, well, what are your solutions, Bob? You have to have an answer. If you're going to complain about things, you better have a fucking solution. Well, I just explained the solution. So I have a solution. You learn my fucking language. You study my chart. Now it goes back to Rabelais. 500 years ago, he said, my goal is to have everybody put down their plow and do nothing but study my books. This is what he said 500 years ago. So literacy, you project yourself over the population through literacy. It's the only medium that began that. You know, it's the first one. Nobody project themselves over a whole population. They just lived in their little areas. So in acoustic space. So literacy makes the megalomaniac impact or impulse possible. Everybody could learn your language. And basically education was that. You didn't have people learning just one person, but you had them learn five fucking things. Geography, history, and that. And it was a limited bunch of information, and you had to learn that, right? That was the cult. And they called it education. They called it progress. Well, you know, that's in the Gutenberg era. Now we got many eras since then. So the whole thing is so hopeless that it's going to blow itself up, and we're going to Andromeda.
Right. Yeah. No,
so while waiting to go to Andromeda, I'll pretend I'm running a cult. Knowing full well it won't happen. But it probably will happen if the aliens come and we have a press conference. I'll be fucking in charge for a few decades. And then everybody will be talking like me. And the kids will be resisting the cult knowledge, because that's what kids have to do, right? They got to form their own identity. But they won't. It won't work. They'll resist. They'll be in their matrix tube for 10 years, trying to learn, trying to get past Bob. And
this is all the mind stuff and like languages of the mind. Then you have the fact that matter is actually changing. And this is what I get to in this little paragraph here that I'm playing with, that outside of my thinking brain or outside of the Android meme or the tech body, the environment, like the atmosphere, the matter is changing. Like the weather.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you could do. It's almost like it's the thing that's happening outside of words. It's just happening. And that's what Carolyn is playing.
Yeah, it's the body, you could say. There's the mind, and then there's the body. So the body, you need to have your body ready to go to Andromeda. That's what's coming, so you got to do that. And you got to be smart enough to realize, I got to do that. So you got to take the products to mutate. And now we've progressed where we have a new kind of product to deal with the next level of intensity in matters changes, which the amino acids will respond to. See? That's the proof here. We're moving past the remag and the remite and that early stuff. We're getting into the drinks and then the living water and the bread of life plus the amino acids. I mean, we are progressing. And that's why that this guy is the most important guy in the world, man. It's fucking, you better fucking find out what he's talking about. It's Mr. R. Kim.
So that brings me to the question Ian told me to ask you, because I was asking Ian, like, do we engage the amino acids before or after mind, body, spirit, bread of living water, you know? So they said, we don't know. It's supposed to roll out in this smooth way, but it seems like it's all going to be coming out all at once. So what do you have to say about that, Bob?
We planned last couple of years the sequence of what was going to happen, and some of it didn't happen yet. But Ian says it's still going to happen. Well, it's all piling up to maybe the last time it's got to happen by then. Let's say it's got to happen by January 2024. What was supposed to happen over the last 18 months.
Okay.
As it doesn't seem to be happening, suddenly it's going to burst out over the next few months, and it'll all happen at once, including what's going on with JW and the amino acids in them, is there's a sequence of surgeries they planned, but now it's doing things that they don't understand, which means some of the surgeries they thought they were going to do, they're not going to have to do because the fucking amino acids already cured them or treated it. So JW's perception of what's it's speeding up is that to him, it's all going to happen all at once, a lot of stuff. It's just cramming up to the final deadline. It's got to happen by January 2024. So if nothing happens by December, well, look out, man. Around Christmas, it's going to be pretty bad as everything fucking happens at once, both good and bad.
Right. Okay. So you're talking on more of the event level.
What's unfolding that the Bible predicted, that I am predicted, and Nostradamus predicted, all these things. The UFO press conference, that's a big thing.
So what about the access to mind, body, spirit? Do you perceive that that would be taking place before there'd be access to the new
Yeah, I would say that's going along pretty fast. I would say those products should be available within 2 months, because we got the factory, we got the money to pay for the making of it, we got the distribution networks. I mean, I know that JW is very busy the last couple of days. If I don't hear what's going on, I just basically get a statement at least once every other day. But often every day, Ian just says, it was another very good day for Bob. they're all working for me, and they report in. You had a very good day today, Bob. I get that email all the time, or that message. So that's happened the last few days. And, you know, so JW told me before the show started, I said, are we talking tomorrow? He said, I don't know. There's other things going to have to happen, I think, so I don't know if we'll be talking tomorrow. So he's very busy, and it's all about preparing the drinks. That's the first thing to come out.
Man, I'm so grateful that amidst all that shit, we still get to have like a Saturday and talk to Ian. I mean, that's fucking awesome.
What did you say? So you're cool. Grateful that you missed what?
I'm grateful that amidst all of what JW's doing, that
he still shows up.
Yeah, we still get to do the show to some degree. I mean, maybe the frequency has to shift, but I'm really grateful for that. I mean, yeah, imagining all that is happening throughout the week, and then it's like, okay, let's go and, you know, get the show going on Saturday night.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
There's was a lot of funny events. I mean, it's not just you guys who want to talk to Ion.
Right.
The top people in the fucking world want to talk to Ion.
Right.
They do all kinds of shit to get access to us. So that going on too, and the conversations are absurd. Like the one I told this person said to Jay, "Well, how do I get to Bob? What's his vice?" Okay,
that's right.
See, they're all trying to find ways to get in on the front floor and be important to it or invest in it or something. But we don't need them.
Yeah.
So they said, "Well, what vice is he into? Kids? What's he into?" And JW said, "Well, he likes Wyndham Lewis." The guy goes, "What's a Wyndham Lewis?"
that's
pretty
amazing.
Funny.
That's so good. Okay, so here's three statements to round out this conversation. So I am just playing with kind of putting these overarching. So this is a response to your and Cameron's talk. I'm getting all these insights, and then I'm thinking about it as it relates to Ion completing the Big Note chart. So Bob's formula chart, aka the Big Note, takes a larger duration of social mortar, figure ground, and their child probes and effects. Because you talk about, you know, the Finnegan's Wake model of the two parents and then the three children of the Big Note chart, how that's laid out. Okay, then Dobbs' tiny note chart, due to the holeopathic shrinking, this chart comes out of the dashed section of the big note chart and shows the capacity for conscious quadrophenia. You with me, Bob?
Yeah, sorry, I accidentally muted my phone. The holeopathic lesion probes and the anthropomorphic physical... the tiny note chart, the dotted line is the hexatic.
Oh, see, I always think that that's the tiny note chart.
No. So
the anthropomorphic
two parts.
Physical is the tiny note chart.
The holeopathic horizontal and the anthropomorphic physical horizontal in the big note, big formula chart, you extract those two levels, and that makes up the tiny note chart. The holopathic blah, blah, blah horizontal is 1-4, and then the anthropomorphic physical is the Dobbs quadrant. That's it. But the sixth level is what the chart's pointing to, and that's the bottom level of the big formula chart of the empty line, dot, 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 dot. That's the hexatic. That's the post-mystery
landscape. Okay. So you're saying the tiny note chart is coming out of holopathic cliche probes and anthropomorphic physical?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so Dobbs' tiny note chart, due to holopathic shrinking, this chart comes out of those two sections of the big note chart and shows the capacity for conscious quadrophenia.
Yeah, which is the life of the dotted level that has no words, no category.
Okay.
That's the weirdness of what we've been experiencing in Iondom.
Yeah, right.
What we call the hexatic. And you know what he said? When you get to the septatic, Bob doesn't apply or something is what he said today. That's an interesting statement.
That is interesting. Okay, so then here's my attempt to summarize what Ion's doing with the completion of the big note, is what they call it. So Ion's completion of the big note shows the merger and post-merger. Conscious quadrophenia is only half the battle and not as astringent in this merged and swirling state. So that's just my first attempt at it. I don't know.
Yeah, those are words feedback. About the mind. The other part is just take the products. That's what you got to do. So we have to end at this point.
Right.
Stop recording. So I think that's you're stating mental problems, mental issues, right? Communication.
Yeah, because they're in the chart, so they do deal with the mind. Yep.
Yeah. No, excellent discussion there. Very good.
Yeah.